Right, welcome back to Sports Central. Pirates made a trade earlier this year, sending Jameson Taillon to the Yankees. One of the guys they got back in return, Rowanzi Contreras, has been absolutely spectacular so far for the Altoona Curve. 11 strikeouts in his season debut last night, and I gotta get a chuckle out of it because it is kind of funny. He's got a perfect game for 5 2/3 innings, and then he walks the damn pitcher. But still, 6 no-hit innings, a spectacular night again for Rowanzi Contreras. 11 strikeouts again against the Binghamton Rumble Ponies. We're going to go up to Binghamton, New York right now. John Moses with a Z joins us, Curve play-by-play broadcaster. What's going on with you today, man? Everything well?
I'm just reveling in the beauty of Rowanzi's big right-handed fastball, man. That was really fun last night. Probably the best pitching performance I've watched in 8 years of watching minor league baseball. I mean, just so dominant. Head in the count, every at-bat, retired 17 straight to start the game. It just really doesn't get much better than that, Corey.
Yeah, and that's – a lot of Pirates fans are going to be interested in this guy and all the players that have come over in the trades for – Josh Bell, Jameson Taillon, Joe Musgrove. The plan, John, was to trade these guys, get prospects for the future. But minor league baseball is difficult. It's hard to project who's going to succeed here or there and get up to the big leagues and succeed. So far, what you've seen from Rowanzi Contreras, what is his upside? What should Pirates fans know about this kid, 21 years old, that they got from the Yankees?
I mean, to me, it looks like at least a mid-rotation starter with a chance to be a front-end guy. Fastball's been 95 to 97, which is a little bit more velocity than what he had in the South Atlantic League in 2019 with the New York Yankees. What I knew of him when I was working in Trenton, the word was, it was a high 80s, low 90s fastball, but a very good changeup and a pretty good curveball. This year, it's a swing-and-miss changeup. It's a swing-and-miss curveball. He's mixed in a slider now. And the fastball is 95 to 97, touching 98, which really just screams top of the rotation ace to me, at least. It's a very cool and calm demeanor on the mound. It is, it's a very clean and easy delivery. Just he never seems to get rattled. And, even when he walked his first batter last night, the pitcher, a relief pitcher, no less, you could see him hopping around and just sort of frustrated with the moment because he recognized what was going on, that he hadn't allowed a base runner. He's working on a perfect game there. And that was probably the most emotion I've seen from him in two starts. So, I think that ability for him to just sort of stay within himself and not get too high or too low in the midst of a great outing is a great sign for his future.
John Moses, Kerr broadcaster, joining us from Binghamton. Is he aware of – I don't know if pressure is necessarily the right way to put it, but all eyes are going to be on someone like him. All these kids that were either in Altoona now or will be in Altoona with the Curve over the next year or so that the Pirates get in these trades. When you get traded for big leaguers, there is pressure. There is attention on you. Is he aware of that as far as you know? Does he care? Is it something that he understands that Pirates fans are 100 miles away and are going to be watching him closely?
It's tough to say. He's got a very free and easy personality, as I understand it, from my conversation with his teammate in Charleston, Kanan Smith and Jigbo, who's another member of that trade for Jameson Taillon. And he just says, Rowanzi is just full of energy and full of life. And, I didn't really get the vibe that either of them felt a pressure because they were traded for Jameson Taillon and that, the Pirates have high hopes for them in the future. I think it's probably a good idea for minor league players to just try to put that stuff aside and just take things one day at a time and focus on themselves and, not really worry about, the type of outside pressures that can be applied on baseball players.
All right, I do want to ask you one thing about the flip side here. Offense is generally really poor in Major League Baseball right now. It's some of the worst offensive performances we've seen in the first month of a season in recorded history. Minor leaguers have not played for a year. A lot of these guys, maybe some were in alt sites last year. I am just curious, just for the sake of discussion here, pitchers we would expect fully to be ahead of hitters right now. They always are, and especially when hitters haven't played for a year. with the Roansy Contreras stuff, as great as he's been, is there any possibility that Binghamton is 0-6 and they're just really bad and they didn't have a clue? How do we gauge the pitcher versus the time frame?
That is a very interesting question. My observation is that hitters are still sort of getting their feet under them. You know, for the guys that just came to minor league camp in Pirate City, you know, they showed up the beginning of April. You know, normally minor league guys are sort of in the swing of things for a full 4 or 5 weeks before big league spring training gets underway. So I can sort of sense that some hitters are still trying to get everything to feel good at the plate. And it'll come with more repetition. You know, this Binghamton lineup, you know, it's not filled with top prospects. You know, Mark Vientos is a decent prospect in the Mets system. He plays third base for them. But they have a couple of veterans. You know, they have guys that know how to hit that have been in the league a little bit in the past. But I would not characterize this as one of the strongest AA lineups that I've ever seen in my time at this level. So possible that you can interpret it that way, that, you know, he's just faced two opponents that aren't all that good, even though Bowie actually looks like they've got a pretty good group with Adley Rutschman in the middle of their order. It's tough to say, but you're two games in, and, you know, I think, you know, you'll learn more once you get to starts 5, 6, and 7, and then you can start to say with some confidence one way or another whether or not he's facing competition that's challenging him or not.
Curve play-by-play man John Moses joining us. You've been around AA for a long time. John came to Altoona from Trenton. I've been around AA for a long time. What I'm most curious to know about is what AA baseball, and specifically with the Pirates, is going to be like over the next handful of years. When you were in Trenton, I'm sure as you saw the curve every year and talking with curve broadcasters, you knew the deal. The Pirates wanted younger prospects in Altoona. We've had a lot of young guys come through here. The way Neil Huntingdon and Kyle Stark and Larry Broadway set up their minor league system, really kind of starting in 2010 when the Curve beat Trenton for the Eastern League title. Josh Harrison, Jordy Mercer, Chase Darno, Rudy Owens, Tony Watson, Justin Wilson, all those guys were first-year AA guys. They were younger guys, and that's when the Pirates really started being age-appropriate, putting younger guys at the AA level. And they did that for the last 10 years. This year's Curve roster has 16 24-year-olds on it, along with some good young players. What is AA baseball going to look like now, John, without short-season ball, without rookie ball, as these organizations try to figure out what kind of players and age groups they want in AA? What's your take on that? What do you think we're going to learn in the next 2 or 3 years?
That is a great question. You know, I think, you know, in your story with Ben Sherrington during our opening homestand at PNG Field, you know, Ben sort of said it best where he said, you know, we just wanted to put guys where it felt like they would be challenged. And, you know, we didn't want to stare too much at previous experience. And, you know, we just wanted to take the players as we saw them today and, you know, place them in places where we felt like they'd be challenged. And I think that's a great strategy. Because you don't want players to open a season at a level that they feel like they've surpassed already. You know, so for example, starting O'Neill Cruz in high A would have been a little bit crazy this year, given that he had already reached double A in 2019 and then was at the alternate site in 2020. So I would expect double A to remain the make or break level. You know, in general, if you can play well at this level, then you'll have enough, then you should be able to find your way to a big league opportunity and have some success there. But, you know, this Mets roster, you know, this Rumble Ponies roster, for example, it's a little bit older. And I think that's more a statement about the Mets upper level minor league system, that they don't have a ton of prospects or a ton of young players that they feel comfortable playing at double A or triple A. But I think for each organization, it'll be a little bit different of an application. And, you know, I sort of applaud the Pirates for putting four guys at age 21 starting every day on the infield here at Altoona. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great challenge for those guys and gives them an opportunity to grow together as they struggle together and experience success together at this level.
How do you think the alt site is viewed, was viewed? Because Travis Swaggerty got to skip AA. That's virtually never happened in the history of the Curve. The Pirates have never let anybody skip AA. Well, he was at the alt site last year. First round pick at the alt site, got that experience. Did they treat the alt site like a year of minor league baseball? Because O'Neill Cruz was at the alt site, and yet he's still back in AA. You could have made the case that O'Neill Cruz could have started actually in AAA, although there's still circumstances we'll get to with O'Neill and his position in a minute. But how do you think the Pirates viewed the alternate site in Altoona last year and how that came up as part of their development strategy?
You know, my sort of understanding of it is they took the approach of using the alt site as a development opportunity. Some clubs that were competing for major league wins or competing for the World Series last year probably took a slightly different approach where they wanted to keep their players game ready to help the major league club. While I think the Pirates, you know, intentionally invited a handful of guys like Travis Swaggerty, like O'Neill Cruz, like Mason Martin to get development opportunity against some older competition, or at least in some controlled competition. It's certainly not the same as having a standard minor league season, and for a position player that might be 125 games worth of at-bats, but it was certainly something, and I think it definitely helped somebody like Travis Swaggerty to understand what the big league evaluators and what the upper level coordinators wanted to see in his game and how it needed to grow in order for him to move on and move up in the minor league system. And I think, you know, once they sort of got to the end of spring training and they took stock of each player individually, I think they felt like, you know, Swaggerty's best option was to play at AAA, where he would be the most challenged and he wouldn't get overwhelmed and hurt his development there. And again, that speaks to the work that Swaggerty put in, not only at the alternate site, but in the off season leading into minor league camp.
John Moses, Curve broadcaster, joining us. Now, on O'Neill Cruz, there's never been an everyday major league shortstop in the history of the game at 6'7". It's just never happened. O'Neill Cruz is a tremendous prospect. He's playing shortstop right now. How long will he play shortstop, do you think, for the Curve? Or does he go to the outfield at some point this season, or do they wait maybe until he gets to AAA for that?
You know, I think that they're approaching this the right way, that you play him every day at shortstop until he proves that he cannot do it. You know, until you start to see evidence that it won't look good in the major leagues, or that it won't be league average, at least from a defensive perspective. You know, I think we still have to remember, he's very young. You know, he was young for the level when he got here in 2019. He's still only 21 years of age now. He's got a lot of baseball in front of him. And, you know, I think more repetition, particularly at shortstop, because that's probably the most difficult infield position, more repetition will help. And, you know, I see a hyper-athletic player, and it hasn't looked awkward at all to me. It's the only thing that's been awkward about it is the fact that he's the tallest man I've ever seen playing in the infield.
Yeah.
But he does appear to have all of the routine plays to be made, and, you know, we'll see how many challenges he sees going forward here. I just think he needs reps every day, and I think the Pirates are committed to him playing shortstop for the whole season here.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I've played shortstop my whole life, baseball, softball. That won't mean anything to anybody, but I've played literally thousands of games at shortstop. I know what it takes on every type of play, and baseball is a game of milliseconds. And so when you're 6'7", and it takes you that just tiny extra little millisecond to bend down and get the ball and get up and get to throw, these are all eyelash fragments. It's just part of physics. I don't dispute that O'Neill Cruz can field a ground ball and throw guys out at first. My issue, and this has been historically proven with baseball, again, there's never in the history of the game, there's never been a 6'7" guy play every day at shortstop in the big leagues. There's a reason for that. There's science. It's all, Ron Burgundy said it's science. You know, there are things that shortstops have to do, will be asked to do, double plays, routine things, where you just need to maximize all of these times. That to me is what's interesting. So here's a minor league question for you, John. This is something that's always been fascinating to me. What are the minor leagues for? Are the minor leagues to get you experience playing, or are they for getting you ready to play in the big leagues? Because you can go both ways with this. O'Neill Cruz is getting experience playing. He's going to play every day. He's going to bat every day. One thing the Pirates have done forever is they'll play guys all over the place. They'll play guys at one position in the minor leagues. Then they get to the big leagues and they're playing a different position. Josh Harrison played third base in the minor leagues. You get into the big leagues, he's asked to play the outfield and go all over the place. Adam Frazier is a shortstop and second base in the minor leagues. You get to see it in big leagues, you got to go in the outfield. Is learning a position in the outfield, or I'm sorry, is learning a position in the major leagues a smart way to do it when you can give these guys time in the minor leagues? How do you view what minor league time should be for?
Yeah, I mean, I think minor league time should be for the development of players to help the big league club in whatever form that is. So for a player like Adam Frazier, you mentioned, you know, infielder his whole career coming up, gets to the big leagues and they say, hey, we need you in the outfield. I think, you know, by the time guys get to double A and certainly in triple A, they're going to need reps at other spots. And they need them because the big league club dictates that need. You know, we have a spot open in the outfield. We want to give this guy a chance to play, at least at the plate. And this is where the available at-bats are, so let's make sure he's good out there. So I think it would be valuable for all of these guys to get reps at other positions, because very rarely does a player get called up and immediately go to the position that they played their entire minor league career at.
Yeah.
Brian Hayes may be an exception to that rule, where he's going to play third base every day for the Pirates whenever he's able to get back onto the field. But I think it is exceedingly difficult to learn a new position at the major leagues. Great example over in Philadelphia with Scott Kingery, where they had him as a second baseman throughout his minor league career, and then he gets to the big leagues, and it's, okay, we need you at shortstop. Okay, we need you at third base. Okay, we need you in center field. And he was just, you know, learning a new position on the fly in the big leagues, and I think that affected his ability at the plate also.
Yeah, sure.
And he's, you know, and he has not turned out to be the player that Philadelphia expected him to be entering the 2018 season. So I think, you know, you run the risk of a player not reaching his ceiling if you ask him to learn a new position in the major leagues.
Yeah, that's a great discussion. John Moses from The Curve. Last thing for you, because this will be interesting coming up on the next homestand beginning in the first week of June. I was asked this by Steve Jones on his radio show earlier today in State College. What will it mean to The Curve to be able to have 100% capacity getting all of the fans back? My thoughts immediately went to money and finances and all those types of things, but there's also the community aspect of it and being able to, you know, be with your friends and family and the social aspect. When you guys get back on June 8th and you have the ability, per the new state guidelines, to sell out People's Natural Gas Field if you can, what will that mean to the franchise?
It's going to be a big step toward normalcy for us. You know, a major lifeblood of minor league baseball teams' business is the ability to sell group tickets, you know, coming out with your church group or your office colleagues or, you know, a big family outing for a birthday party. You know, that is really important to the bottom line of the business, because not only do you get the diehard baseball fans that come in those groups, but you also get friends of theirs who may just be much more casual baseball fans or just looking for a nice way to get out of the house with and spend a couple hours with the kids and enjoy a family-friendly environment. It is remarkably important for our business, but it's extremely exciting, and I think is a nod toward the normalcy that we're hopefully remaining on track to put the last, you know, year and change into our rearview mirror. And, you know, we're excited to see every fan in the seats beginning on June 8th. That should be a very exciting time for us.
Awesome. Thank you, John. Curve play Binghamton again coming up here in just a little bit. John Moses will be on the call. We'll see if Curve can win their fourth in a row and drop Binghamton to 0-7. That Binghamton team, they ain't any good at all, man.
There's something here. Their starter last night, Tyler McGill, he's going to pitch in the big leagues. He looked very good. But they're a little bit light in the position player group, so we'll see if Altoona can keep them out of the win column for one more day.
12-game road trip. Enjoy that!
Thanks very much, Corey.
Appreciate it, man.